Hey, everybody. Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen Podcast, the podcast where we attack video games, approach them, talk about them one very specific topic at a time. My name is Michael Fahey. I am joined this week by cartoon character Ashley Parrish. Say hi, Ash.
Oh, no.
Wow, that was bad.
That was like the Joker.
Yeah, that was terrifying. And as always, anthropomorphic squirrel Nathan Grayson, named Grayson because squirrels are gray.
Oh. I mean, yeah, it is true. All squirrels are gray. Also, squirrels don't really make a sound that I'm aware of. They sort of chitter, so I'm going to skip that part.
I think they scream.
They scream?
I'm finding...
is that what they're known for?
What are you doing to squirrels? Jesus. And it's like, no, I'm pretty sure the squirrels scream a lot. Whenever I have a squirrel, it just screams and screams for no reason.
Or like their little chirpy noises like sound like screams. I'm just thinking of that one viral video where the squirrel screams. It sounds like a scream.
Is it where it goes, Alan? Alan. That's actually a human voice.
Huh. No, that's not what I'm thinking.
This week's subject... I was trying to get to, but then Ash made squirrel scream, is mascots. Mascots. Who doesn't love a good mascot? Mascots have been around in various forms for over 100 years. We'll get into that in our first segment here, which is a mascot through the ages quiz. Now, before we begin my special quiz, for I am the quiz master... Was that dramatic enough, everybody?
I think so. I enjoyed it.
Okay, good. Let us define what a mascot is. A mascot character is basically any human, animal, or object that's thought to, like, bring luck. It's kind of like lately in modern society, it's kind of like the public identity of a brand can be considered a mascot character. Sports mascots, of course.
Like Gritty.
Gritty is a mascot and a nightmare at the same time. He probably makes squirrel scream now that I think
Gritty
about it.
Gritty is a comrade. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yes. Gritty's on our side. Gritty's on everyone's side.
He's making squirrel scream. But basically, that's what a mascot is. They've been around for thousands of years. And the first question in my quiz is a tough one on purpose. Don't worry. Where does the word mascot originate from?
From the mascot region in France. If it's from anywhere else, it's sparkling anthropomorphized team member.
Oh, wow. Man.
He's actually pretty close. Nathan, any ideas now?
Yeah, I'm going to say, I don't know, the mascot region of Germany.
The mascot region of Germany is very, very depressing. And it's filled with time travelers having moral conundrums. That's where the time travelers come from. The word mascot originates from the French term mascotte.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. Mascotte. M-A-S-C-O-T-T-E. And that means lucky charm.
Huh. When we're having lucky charm cereal, we're having mascot cereal.
We're eating mascots, and they should scream like Ash's squirrels. Yes. Now, back in the day, mascots were considered like one might think like a masthead on a ship could be their mascot. But this is a quiz about video game mascots, so we'll go ahead and jump forward from there around 100 years to the first video game mascot. Who is the first video game mascot? Who is widely considered to be the first video game mascot?
I'm going to guess Pac-Man.
E.T.? Yeah. Why not?
Because you're a monster. That's why not.
Yeah.
I guess he was a movie mascot, but I don't think the Atari wants to be associated with E.T. as its mascot. Nathan hit it with Pac-Man 1980.
Yeah.
Now,
other guess was going to be one of the paddles in Pong, but not both.
Yes. If you ask me without me doing any research, I would have gone... Well, maybe the Invader and Space Invaders.
Oh. I mean, yeah, I can almost see that.
Yeah, it's become like a cultural icon over the years, but it's not like Tato's like, hey, Space Invader. He's our brand. Okay. We know Sonic the Hedgehog. He's Sega's mascot. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I ruined my question. I'm just kidding. I did not ruin my question. I staged ruining a question. Name one of the Sega mascots, and there were two of them, before Sonic the Hedgehog.
Hmm. Interesting.
No idea.
Let's see.
You guys knew I was doing a quiz, right? Did you study it all, Ash? I know.
Why would I study for a quiz?
No, I mean, I figured it out. Sagata Sanshiro.
That was a reference nobody got. Or, maybe Fahey got it.
He was a whole thing in mainly Japanese marketing, but he was great. Anyway.
Okay, Alex Kidd.
Oh, right. Alex Kidd. I remember that game.
Yeah, no, he was going to be the face of Sega until they got a better face. Also, the Opa Opa.
The Opa Opa.
Opa Opa.
Oh, okay. I had to think about that for a second because I'm like, are those boobs? But that think that's Opai.
Yeah, that is. I mean, that's like Opa really Gangnam Style, which is...
Opa Gangnam Style. It's from Fantasy Zone. The little ship from Fantasy Zone with the wings.
No.
Yeah, that was considered... Wow. Well, this is going to be a bad quiz then. Okay.
I don't think you quite understand how much of a baby I am and have no idea.
You can be a baby and still, we could put stuff up to the womb and you could listen to it and gain knowledge somehow. I don't know how babies work, and I have two of them. Somehow they're still alive 10 years on, but...
Doing a good job.
I know. Who was Capcom's first mascot? Who mainly appeared on game boxes and in ads. There weren't a lot of games with this mascot.
Hmm.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you say Capcom and mascot, and I just think Mega Man.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought Ryu from Street Fighter, but I realize that's probably still too late.
Think of the name Capcom.
Cappy? Super Mario Galaxy?
Yes.
Yeah,
Nintendo's
made a comeback years later. Mario Cappy's still getting work. Let's see. I don't know.
Split Capcom in two.
Captain America is Capcom's
mascot.
Captain Kid?
Captain know. Captain Comics.
Captain Commando.
There we go. See, I nailed it.
Capcom, Captain Commando.
Huh.
Well, now, this is making me very
sad. Did they name that character first, or did they name the company first?
Company first.
Okay.
Did they fit the character to the company or something? Like that?
I think it was just a happy accident. I'm kidding. I'm pretty sure they fit the captain. It might have been a happy accident. You know, Mike, why don't you look it up? Because I'm a murderer. That's why. You heard it first here on the podcast. Here's one. Here's a good one. This garbage mascot with a rhyming name appeared in one Tengen game from the early 90s, but he's considered a mascot. Garbage mascot. It is an animal. And their name rhymes.
Mascot. Man, you picked some really obscure ones. I
know you guys would be looking it up. I figured you guys would be researching mascots.
I had no plans to look anything up. I just figured I could come in here, not study.
It is one of the most beloved trash animals that is not a raccoon.
I mean, I'm guessing like it's a tanuki. It's a
possum.
A raccoon or something.
Wait, Ash.
Possum.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome possum.
Ash got it. Man. I'm gonna give that to Ash. See, yay. Ash has 20,000 points. I got so excited I hit my microphone with my arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this should be an easy. A softball to Nathan, I say.
Oh, I like softballs.
Yeah, the TurboGrafx-16 mascot, Nathan.
Wait, this isn't a softball.
This is not a softball at all.
Yeah,
technically, it is a softball if you think about it, because... softballs are big and round.
All right, so I'm going to say Pac-Man again.
That's what I would have guessed.
Softballs are big and round like the skulls of cavemen.
I think I know who you're talking about, but I don't remember their name. Something the caveman.
Bonk! Bonk! Oh my goodness!
Bonk the caveman.
He was
there
everywhere. He had a giant head, and we think he was a baby. We're not sure.
He may have been everywhere, but I was not there at the time. So I was nowhere.
Okay, hopefully this next one will be easier. Name four cartoonish characters or teams who vied for PlayStation mascot status in the 90s. There were some very clear The PlayStation was like a haven in the 90s for mascot characters. Mm-hmm. And these were four of the biggest.
Let's see. Okay, we got Crash.
Blink's the Time Sweeper.
No, that's definitely not.
That's not, no.
I know, that's not one.
But no, okay, so we got Spyro, Crash Bandicoot.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Okay.
Sly Raccoon, what was that guy named?
No, that was PS2.
Oh, God damn it.
Who's
the egg guy?
You mean like the one who the Sonic creator made?
Maybe. The one who, Billy Porter or something?
Billy Hatcher?
Oh, there you have that guy.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, that was on GameCube and PS2.
God damn it.
I think the last two I'm thinking of are blank and blank.
Lara Croft and Kratos. Oh, no, that's too late. Damn it.
I mean, Lara Croft was one of the main like characters of that era, but she's not really a mascot. She's too much of a human being.
I know, but why?
Okay, I will accept PlayStation 2 characters in this, too. I wasn't trying to say that they were just PlayStation 1.
Oh, okay.
So,
well then Jack and Daxter.
Jack and Daxter and
Ratchet and Clank.
Who? Never heard of those guys. Ratchet and Clank. I just finished Ratchet and Clank. There's a review up today on Kotaku.com. Everyone should read it. But this comes out on what, Friday?
Uh-huh.
So they'll be the playing.
They'll be up.
They'll be busy playing. Yeah, that was a four-parter. I'm sorry, that was a little tough. Okay, here's an easy one for everybody. Square Enix has several mascot characters, almost all derived from the Final Fantasy series. Name the best.
The Chocobo. And Moogle.
Yeah, I mean, Moogles and Chocobos are the best. Maybe you're angling toward, like, Kate Sith. I don't know.
I mean, you're both kind of right, but also wrong because it's Tonberry.
I hate Tonberries.
Oh, Tonberry, no.
They hate you, too.
One's slowly walking towards you right now, and you don't even know it.
I know, but I mean, it has been for my whole life. It will eventually catch up to me, but I mean, I'll, like, at the same time be dying of natural causes anyway, so it won't matter.
He'll show up just the last minute. You'll go be like, tell my children I...
Right.
And then Tonberry's like, oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah, I'll be like, oh, darn, I missed it.
Was that your Tonberry voice?
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, they're slow, so I just feel like they're very, you know, no. I'm sad all the time.
Okay. There are only two more left. One of them's kind of easier for Nathan if you paid attention because, the question is, which obscure video game mascot character is tattooed on my arm?
Fuck.
That is not the name of any mascot that I'm aware of. Fuck the Hedgehog.
I'm pretty sure there is. I'm not going to search that on Google. Never mind.
No, it'd be very bad.
No.
Let's see. Okay. Scare mascot here. I mean, I can visualize it, but I don't. The names are not.
What color is it? What color is it?
It's like, what, pink and blue? There.
You don't even know.
I guess you've never
looked at my arm.
Wait, Jazz Jackrabbit.
Oh, yes, you were. Did you just look that up?
No. No, it just came to me.
I would have also accepted Etna from Disgaea because she's on the other arm, but not quite a mascot. Who would be the mascot for Disgaea games?
The penguin. Exploding penguin.
Yeah. The Prinnies. Very good. That wasn't an official question. The final question in our quiz for mascots before moving on. Who is the mascot of Kotaku?
The fish. The sensor fish. Final answer.
No, I'm going to give I'll go ahead and say the sensor fish is pretty much our mascot. I was looking for something funny, but I think
Ash is funny.
Ash is, the sensor fish, the origin of the sensor fish. Here we go. The secret origin. I was pointing at something on a post back in like 97, and I didn't want to do an arrow because I was sick of arrows, so I used a fish. It was a post.
And then the fish became everyone's dick.
And then we covered it, and then for a while, the fish had words that would say official Kotaku sensor fish or pointing fish. Right.
Hi.
Sorry, my son just popped in to give me the finger.
That's the mascot of the Fahey family.
Wow, he's giving everyone the finger. That sounds about right for the Fahey family.
Yeah, I know. Oh, so this is like the edgy attitude era of your family's mascots. This is like the Shadow the Hedgehog of your family.
Oh my God, he's got a gun.
Oh no,
that's a problem. Move on to the next segment.
Yeah, so get away from him. Hey God, we'll be back after these commercial breaks.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, your source for video games something or others. Today's episode is about mascots. We just had our quiz, and coming back, we're going to talk about In the Headlines with Ash Parrish. The cartoon thing. Go who? So, you didn't go.
You know, I was thinking about it, but I wanted to spare you the horror of me making those mouth noises.
It's never going away.
It's not. That's a thing now. Ratchet and Clank is out today. So we decided to, you know, talk about the mascots that are in the headlines nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
Ratchet and Clank.
Clank and Rivet. I'm a little out of my depth because I've never played a Ratchet and Clank game before. I think of all the mascot-y games. I've played Mario and Sonic, obviously. Mm-hmm. But like those other games I haven't played. I played a little bit of Spyro. I think that might have been the only one from the like early PS2 era where it was just like chock full of nothing but these like emblematic mascots for that console. I think Spyro was the only one that I ever played, and I just missed out on everything else. I think I aged out. All I wanted to do was play Final Fantasy.
You missed Jersey Devil. You missed Glover. You missed... Oh.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that we've managed to mention Glover so much recently.
I know, it's really like every freaking podcast we come up. But no one mentions Blasto.
No one does.
The Hanar from Mass Effect?
Yep, bingo, you got it.
And that's exactly.
Is there another Blasto? Is there legitimately another Blasto, and I just don't know who
it
is?
Yeah, Blasto. Phil Hartman was a spaceman.
Oh.
Famously voiced. It was during the, let's try to find a Dana Gould, a Gex Dana Gould type mascot for Phil Hartman. Oh, God. We'll have another mascot episode later. Trust me. I'll just go back.
Oh, man. We should have just done a Let's Remember Some Mascot segment.
Aw.
Faye, tell us about Ratchet.
Yeah. So Ratchet, let's do an informal AFQs here.
Ask Faye questions? Okay. Go for it. Yeah. I have completed the game at this point, and I will try to avoid... I will avoid spoilers no matter what.
Neato.
How long did it take you?
How long did it take me? I want to say... maybe 15 hours. I'm still going back. I'm actually playing through New Game Plus right now. I have 42 out of 47 achievements. Trying to go for that platinum. Because it's the sort of game you pick up and play and you want to keep playing. And towards the end of the game, when you run out of enemies and you're just cleaning up like for the final boss fight, it's like, I want to go back and shoot some more peoples. And so when it goes, hey, start a new game, you're like, yes, I will start a new game. Here we go. It's not something I come across much in my line of work, is the game ending and me going, okay, let's start over.
Mm-hmm.
I would never
do that. Based on the review, which I read, which was written by John Walker, who does a lot of editing for us, the game sounds like it's really good, as pretty much every Ratchet game has been, but it also sounds like it's kind of pretty well in line with all the other ones. Like, it's fairly similar to, you know, everything that's come before. Is that accurate to your experience?
Here's the thing. Well, Insomniac makes it's Insomniac, right? I'm not being stupid right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's Insomniac.
They make good feeling games. They know how to make a game that feels great. Ratchet & Clank has always felt great. Even the stupid driving one, which I can't play. That one's great, too. No, I'm thinking Jax Combat Racing. Never mind, that wasn't even them. I'm thinking like Going Commando or the arena one they had. They always felt great. But the stories, it feels like they've run out of stories to tell with Ratchet and Clank. Because they had several games, then they had the reboot that was based on the movie that basically told the same story again. And now we've got a new character coming in who basically, Rivet almost feels like a surrogate Ratchet. Like, we're going to tell the same sort of story, only now we have a new character to tell that same story with. So his main criticism is that it feels samey. It feels like the story hasn't gone much of anywhere, and it doesn't. It feels like they added a new character on and said, let's tell the same story-ish with this new character, which feels like a cop-out.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of the kind of games that we consider like mascot games and mascot platformers wind up in that territory of kind of treading water over time, in part because, you know, I don't think they were ever meant to be these story-driven behemoths or whatever. They were always just sort of meant to be light, fun. And so when you bring them into the more modern era of games and we expect these AAA productions with storylines and characters and arcs and all of this, you know, Hollywood quality writing, there's some friction there because there's only so much you can get out of them. And then on top of that, like you're saying, Ratchet and Clank has been around for how long now? 2 decades?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God. And I mean, there's only so much you can get out of something that has been around for that long and has been explored from so many different angles.
Yeah, I think John told me that while he was playing it, he went back. I don't know if he mentioned it in the review yet because I skimmed it. He showed it to me yesterday. But he said he went back and played some original Ratchet and Clank, and it's amazing how much the feel is similar to the same.
Even with all the PS5 bells and whistles?
Here's the thing with the bells and whistles. As I was playing through the initial first couple hours of the game, it took me some time to get used to all the shit on the screen because they push the hell out of that system and there's always dust particles or ships in the air or things exploding that have nothing to do with what you're doing currently. You know, birds flying or, you know, dinosaurs flying about. There's so much going on that my mind's like, okay, I need to just focus on what I'm doing right here, because I was getting distracted by everything else. I had a similar feeling when I was playing Godfall, the PlayStation launch title.
Yeah,
there
a game where, yeah, I mean, it seems like the sort of thing they're doing right now is just trying to show like, hey, we are on a new console, look at everything it can do,
look at all the particles, woohoo,
right? But it's like, what purpose does this serve aside from, you know, making the action harder to read?
Is it too cluttered?
It is a bit too cluttered on several of the worlds. Ratchet takes place across a number of worlds. It's like their format. You fly from world to world and complete various tasks. There are some worlds, like there's one world that's vast and open, and I really like it because it's got like open sky. But there's other places where it's like, here's just a ton of dust. Enjoy your ton of dust that you're working through. I get it. I get that this is a next generation game. There's no mistaking it for anything else. Even when you switch down to 60 frames per second performance mode, it's obvious this is a next generation game. And the gimmick with the portals and stuff, some of it's pretty amazing. I mean, there's one level where you hit a crystal and the entire level changes to a completely different level. Anchored by these crystals. So you're running back and forth, and it's amazing how quickly that happens. There's no way in hell a system that wasn't a PlayStation 5 would be able to pull that off without some sort of loading, some sort of transition.
Yeah, that's really neat. Because, I mean, cool. I was kind of thinking about it, and, you know, you're saying, like, going between planets and everything, that's the Ratchet format. And it's kind of like, well, you think about some of the other mascot characters who have endured for as long as they have. And, you know, say what you will about some of their experiments, but they've all tried new things. They've tried to evolve in various directions. Like, I mean, Super Mario Odyssey was very good, but I think also maybe not, like, as good as some other Mario games.
Yeah.
But it did some, you know, pretty off-the-wall stuff. I mean, it still was a world-based format, but, like, New Donk City was wild, for example. And then, like, Sonic is in this constant state of identity crisis.
Oh, poor Sonic.
But, like, again, at least they are trying to take that character and, you know, the ideas that he inspires in new directions. Whereas Ratchet just seems like it found this thing that worked for it from the get-go and just really didn't deviate much. And I guess I'm wondering, like, especially with a new platform like the PlayStation 5, why they didn't maybe, you know, do a little bit more of that, get a little bit more experimental.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same sort of incremental improvement you'd get in, like, a Crash Bandicoot game where, oh, now we have a level where you ride a tiger. Here you have a level where you do a thing. There are the innovations that aren't straight up technical, you know, details and graphics and such, are relegated to level-based gimmicks. There's a level where you ride a slimy snail thing through swamps really fast, really friggin' fast. When you ride fast in Ratchet and Clank, you're riding damn fast, especially in 60 frames per second. Just putting that out there. My God, the speed is nuts. But and there's another where you fly a dinosaur around to collect some stuff. And hopefully I'm not breaking. Well, this will come out on review day.
Yeah, you're
review
fine.
Day, so we're fine. That's the limits. I mean, otherwise you're running around, you're jumping, you're hitting things, you're shooting. It's the same format. They could probably downgrade this to a PS4 game. Wait, is this coming out on PS? It's not coming out. This is PS5 only. That's right.
Yeah, I think it's PS5 only.
A little confused with the state of PS4, PS5 compatibility these days. They could easily downgrade it and sell it as a PS4 game. I don't. There'd be some problems with the loading between the portals. I think, but you declutter it and it would work on a PS4 game. It would feel like a PS4 game. And
yeah.
Do you think that it's a good, I don't know, starting point for new people to the series? Because I would be one of those people. And just because the idea of playing a Ratchet and Clank game, at least now, is kind of appealing to me because everybody is speaking so highly of it. And it is one of those games that I missed out on. Do you think there's a place for a noob at the table at Ratchet and Clank with this game?
There is a bit at the beginning where they kind of go through Ratchet and Clank's previous achievements, kind of like a celebration of him. I mean, the game opens with a parade, basically, in his honor, with bouncy floats and all kinds of things that tells of his past achievements. I think a newcomer coming in is going to miss a lot of those past achievements. There'll be a lot of references. As you go to the new dimensions, you meet counterparts of characters that you're not familiar with, and I feel like that has more impact than someone who's been with the series over the years.
Mm.
But you don't need that foreknowledge to get Ratchet and Clank. I think the reveal of Rivet, the inclusion of Rivet, is something that feels more special to older fans, because he's been looking for a damn long box for so freaking long.
And well, yeah, I mean, that was the thing that was in John's review, too, where he was talking about how, like, in some ways, having that character helps because she's a new lens through which to see this world. So if you're a new player, she kind of functions as your presence in the world. And, like, the way that you would perceive maybe continuations of running gags or ideas or whatever. It's like, well, here's this character who also has no familiarity with any of them.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, in a way, certainly. I feel like the ideally you'd want it to at least play through the one. Was it the one that they make it free on PlayStation Plus or something? The PS4 one from a few years back, the movie tie-in? Because that's his origin story, retold. I mean, I almost think that would be a good place to start and get familiar with him and learn the story of Ratchet and Clank coming together and how they formed a team. I feel like that's an important part of the backstory. But you don't need to. You really don't need to. If you like fluffy characters, I will warn everyone that the ending, where it's just 45 minutes of animated Lombax sex, is just humping like crazy. And the weird thing is, Lombax's reverse genders. Rivets on top. Whole time. And you never look. We assumed that Ratchet had a penis.
And
spoilers? I'm sorry. Yeah,
you really spoiled it there. In a lot of different ways. But I do want to, before we move on to the next segment, I am curious about something pertaining more broadly to Ratchet and Clank, which is like these characters have been around forever. They've had tons of adventures. They still resonate. Why do you think they work? Why when so many other mascot platformers have died off, has Ratchet and Clank stuck around and continued to come back, you know, every 5 years or so at least? Like, is it just, you know, the fact that they're a Sony property and it's attrition, Sony can just keep bringing them back? Or is there something more to them that makes them unique in this grand scheme of mascot games and platformers?
The Ratchet and Clank games have always had a feel to them. When I'm playing a game like Destiny, which I'm pretty sure one of you doesn't can't acknowledge exists, Destiny 2, Ash cannot acknowledge Destiny 2. Is that our canon?
That is our canon.
Yes.
Okay. When you're playing Destiny and you're shooting someone and you get that headshot and it feels natural, it feels good. It's that same sort of feeling when I pick up a Ratchet and Clank game. It feels good. There's nothing clumsy about it. You immediately have an affinity for how he controls. The action, the core action is so good that it's survived. I mean, the other mascot characters sucked. You know, for every Ratchet and Clank, there's a dozen Blastos that feel clunky as you move them about, you know, awkward. They nailed gameplay on Ratchet and Clank, and they can keep bringing back Ratchet and Clank. I mean, even one that's kind of derivative story-wise, like this most recent, like Rift Apart, it's got that action, and that is like a siren song to fans of platformers like this. It's intoxicating, and it's good to have it back. It's a good action to have more of. Like I said, when I finished the game, I wanted to play more. Simply for that, the shooting feels so good, the rail sliding, everything feels so good. And that's what it is. It's a game that feels good, and they keep bringing it back, and the goodness is always better than any staleness to the story. People are starting to notice more, though, with this release, so hopefully the next one is spectacular and different. Maybe they'll go to the Lombax planet, and it's all Lombaxes all the time. But right now, this is great, and it's a lot of fun to play, and that's what Ratchet's all about. It's just, here's a good experience. You're going to have a good experience. That's why we keep bringing it back. You know. You know what's also a good experience, though? Taking breaks.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And welcome back from our break for our third and final segment of this, our mascot episode. We sent cartoon squirrel Nathan Grayson out into the wild to bring us back a guest, and a magnificent guest he brought. Nathan, introduce our guest.
So today we have joining us Chris Sutherland, who worked on such games as Donkey Kong Country and Banjo-Kazooie and Yooka-Laylee. Hey, Chris.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Good, thanks. Yeah, just excited to be on the podcast today.
Excellent. Well, then, yeah, to start this off, I think that, you know, if we're talking mascots, Banjo and Kazooie are kind of some of the most enduring around in, like, video games. And so, like, I'm sure that, you know, when you and the rest of the folks at Rare were making them, you probably weren't aware that they were going to be around years and years later. But you probably wanted to make something that was, you know, recognizable and fun. And so in creating those characters, what were you going for initially? How many iterations did you go through? Like, were they always a bird and a bear? Or, like, what was the kind of process there?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of almost by accident, or it's not. It's kind of not completely deliberate in terms of the way that they were developed. I mean, nowadays you'd have a process for some, you'd come up with a whole bunch of ideas and you'd do concepts of all these different possibilities and you'd whittle them down. But this was kind of a strange development because we'd been working on a game which was and never became released, which was for the N64, which was known as Project Dream, which had a character which was a boy with a sword, Edson, and then it was more of an RPG. Then late on in development, well, after about a year of development of that, we then switched in this bear character, which was Banjo. And then we changed the game from an RPG to be more of a 2D side-on collectible thing. And then that got then changed again to be more 3D collectible. And then we changed. And so then we added a backpack. In the 2D side-on stage, we had a backpack added, and then that added Kazooie on, and that was more because we needed to have a double jump and other moves that we wanted to do. So we kind of noticed he had a backpack, and we stuck this bird in and thought that would be a good solution. So it's kind of like, it's a bit like creating something by starting off with one thing and bolting other things on and then saying, oh, move that thing, take that thing away, put this thing on here, rather than methodically sitting down. And you might imagine it's like a methodical process where you step through everything, but it wasn't like that at all. It was kind of a bit haphazard, really.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying Kazooie was added on Banjo to justify having a double jump? So there's like a mechanical reason that this bear can double jump? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That's as I remember it. It was as much as for that reason than anything else. It wasn't particularly for a character reason, but obviously, I guess it kind of comes hand in hand in that you think when Greg was coming up with the design, he was thinking, well, how do I solve this problem? And they thought, well, maybe have Kazooie in the backpack and she comes out and then can do the double jump. But then in tandem, that idea becomes kind of funny and amusing. And you think, oh, that kind of works as a kind of character duo. That would be quite an amusing thing. And so it kind of leads you in that circular way of thinking of going, oh, right, from leading you into the idea of there's a second character. And then, oh, the second character would be quite fun to play with. Oh, and that would make the two characters have some interplay between them. And so you kind of get caught in that loop there. And then you end up with the two characters.
Mm-hmm. That's neat that like somebody finally, instead of just like, okay, for no physical reason, this person can defy physics and just whoop, whoop. But no, there's a little bird that helps him flap. And that's why she's there. And I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my takeaway from this is, like, I'm sorry, are you telling me that real bears can't double jump? I just always assumed.
I guess that was it. I mean, we could have just said that bear just double jumps. I mean, it's kind of that thing. There's so much other things in video games that we just take for granted that are just fantastical. And yet we can't seem to make certain leaps of faith to say, well, this character just has the ability to double jump. So why not just allow that to happen? So it's a good question, actually, isn't it?
And yeah, so wait, when in this whole process did you become the voice of Banjo and Kazooie, actually?
That was actually back on when we were doing Project Dream, when we'd moved from the character, because I'd voiced the character of Edson, and the line I remember, there was he came on screen and there was a dog which he saw which was stranded or tied up or in trouble, and he said something like, a dog, I can hear a dog down there, I better go and see if he's all right. And then that was Edson, and then we changed it to a bear character. And I remember Tim Stamper coming to me and saying, okay, well, we need to have this, the bear needs to have a different voice. And this was before we had Banjo, who, you know, as you know Banjo today, he only ever says gaw from back in those games. But he actually did say a line back then, because I did have a line. I had to say the same line, so I had to repeat the lines as Banjo. But the origins of the noises came about, I think.
Wait, can you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
can
so
you
it
do
would
that
have been a dog. I could hear a dog down there. I better go and see if he's all right. It was just that. But. that came about with Tim Stamper sitting next to me and saying, well, he's got this voice, and he was trying to describe this voice, and I was just trying different things. That was probably the first thing that came to mind. And then he said, and he'd maybe have this noise as well that he could say. And then that's where the gluh came into it. And so I think we then introduced that in there. Yeah, so it's kind of just just like people just talking together about different ideas. But it's interesting how it developed from one game where he was actually a different character, and then he spoke, and then he never spoke really much at all ever since then.
And he could have sounded like Goofy, because there was a lot of Goofy in there.
There isn't. There's definitely no, and that's probably, there's probably an influence of that in there. But you don't, you probably, you see that when, or you hear that when, if I did the actual, you know, I do the actual speech, but when you just hear Glaw, you don't maybe piece that together, but that's probably an influence.
We're just going to replace the entire podcast with you just going gaha and just repeating it.
I mean, it sounds as good as it did, like way back in the day. Like I was like, oh yeah, that's Banjo, all right. Like it hasn't changed at all.
Well,
like,
it may still be deeper, maybe. I mean, so if I do Kazooie and it's bee, well, I think that's still quite high.
Yeah.
And did they bring you on to do the Smash Brothers?
They did. I mean, that was, so I didn't even know that was happening until obviously I was watching the launch like everybody else, but I'd been tipped off by somebody else that it was going to happen, but that was only 24 hours before, but I didn't know that they were going to use that. But then they used, I think they just used the original samples from what I could tell.
So you are in Smash, technically.
Yeah, that's right. It's quite weird. You're a playable character. That, yeah. Somehow I managed to make it into Smash. Kind of crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that part of that, you know, is, again, that Banjo and Kazooie are these characters that people are just really attached to. And how much of, like, the way that they... Because you've kind of explained now where they came from. But what about, like, their personalities and their dynamics and stuff? Because I was kind of, like, struck by the way you described coming up with Banjo's voice and, like, the sound he makes. How much of his character came out of just, like, that sound? Of you being like, I've made this sound and, like, this is kind of this guy's vibe.
That's a good question. I think maybe that did help a bit. It kind of gave him a kind of a sense of somebody who's, from just that sound, or maybe the way he spoke, like in that voice bit from the previous game in Dream, it gave him that sense he's a kind of a character who's quite trusting. Maybe he's not completely switched on, but he tries to help people. And then that parries together with the Kazooie, who's got the sharp wit. I mean, it would have been Greg Mills that came up with the idea of the character Greg and Tim, the two characters and the two personalities and the way that they talk to each other. So they'd have more insight into exactly how they invented those. But hopefully that with, you know, maybe the noise did help in a way to kind of imbue him with that sense of kind of almost like a fearless but not the most intelligent adventurer who just always puts his best foot forward.
So yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, I find it interesting that you've been around now for like different iterations or different eras of like the idea of mascot games, that, you know, they're for Donkey Kong Country and Banjo and now Yooka-Laylee, and these games all came out in very different times. I think, like, at least during Donkey Kong Country and Banjo, like mascot platformers were one of the big things in video games. There are just a lot of them. And I think now they're significantly fewer. But yeah, I mean, in making each of those games and in, you know, like creating worlds and characters and settings and all of this, what kind of considerations did you make, I guess, in each of those eras? It's kind of a big question, I apologize. But like, from Donkey Kong to Banjo, how different was your perception of making a game that's fundamentally still about, you know, a fun cartoony character running and jumping?
Yeah, I guess with Donkey Kong, it was slightly different because we had someone else's IP and we were trying to skew it to our own ways. And then with Banjo, it was, you know, we had more freedom because we were creating our own thing. I think back those days, we probably had less, we weren't thinking so much about, is it cool? Well, I suppose we did want it to be cool. I wanted to appeal to people, but we kind of more wanted to appeal to us as much as anything else. And so perhaps that's, and that's still true today, even when we came up with Yooka-Laylee. So, you know, we wanted it to be something that we find fun. And I think that's probably where we start with, because there's a danger, I think, with a lot of these mascot characters. When you look at them, and I remember this from back in that era of the '90s, where a lot of them felt like they'd just been concocted by people in a room saying, well, kids want something cool. So maybe he has a baseball cap and maybe he's got training shoes and maybe that makes him cool. And
sunglasses.
Maybe he should have sunglasses. Maybe he should wear the baseball cap to the side or maybe the back. Is that cooler? And then it's somebody who's kind of much older's interpretation of what somebody really young's hope of what something cool would look like. So trying to, it's, you know, it almost felt forced in that way in some of these cases. And I think that kind of comes out in some of those. Whereas in the case of something like Banjo and DKC, hopefully the characters we created, they're just things that we found cool. And I think other people latched on to that, which I don't know if that exactly answers your question. I kind of rambled a bit, but hopefully got something.
Well, it's Banjo Kazooie and Yooka-Laylee have a charm that's more timeless, whereas things like your Jersey Devil and who else? Glover is just all attitude. Or Chester Cheetah, who appeared in several video games, they had a very much of the time coolness. So there's timeless charm to Banjo and Kazooie and Yooka-Laylee. Of course, Donkey Kong's wearing a tie, running around doing his own thing. He doesn't even care about video game eras. He's Donkey Kong. But it is a big difference between something that's timeless and something that's going to age poorly. Let's put it that way.
I guess the other thing we tried to do was add in a kind of dual layer of humor. I think that was an inspiration on Greg's part from something like The Simpsons, where you've got comedy which appeals to, you know, younger audience, but also, you know, the adults can smirk and laugh and chuckle along as they watch the gags come in. So in the case of Donkey Kong Country, we had Cranky, who was the character who was always, you know, making fun of Donkey Kong. And then in the Banjo series, you've got the two characters themselves that they're playing off each other, and also the comedy with the characters they meet, and they're always, Kazooie's always making jokes and jabs at them. And then we kind of tried to emulate that kind of style of thing with Yooka-Laylee as well. So by having that duality, I think it almost means that when you look back or you go back and you play those things that you played as a young kid, you might have interpreted them as one way, not really seen certain things. And then when you play them again, you go, oh, that was there. Oh, that meant this. So I didn't realize that. Or, you know, there's certain nuances that are there that you didn't quite get.
Yeah.
And I think by having that dual layer, it kind of maybe allows you to prolong make it a longer lasting, fun set of things.
Well, yeah. So, go ahead.
I was going to ask, have you experienced any of that going back and playing like Donkey Kong Country or Yooka-Laylee or Banjo-Kazooie? Like, did you ever realize, like, oh, I didn't even, or, you know, I missed this. I didn't see this before. That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, I can't actually, unfortunately, think of any examples, but there are things when I've gone back and played the games, often because, you know, the way when we developed them back then, we'd focus on developing all the games and we'd spend loads of time playing lots of areas, the same area over and over again. But then you go back and you play bits and you might not even remember if you ever played that bit, that section of the game, because you might have, as a developer, you might have always skipped past that bit and just said, oh, I need to go back to this bit because I've got to fix a bug on this area. So there's perhaps bits you don't notice. And so there's certainly probably bits of dialogue that I probably didn't spot the first time round. It would be good to give you an example, but unfortunately I can't think of one right now.
Well, yeah. So a thing that I find really interesting about all of this is you talk about the creation of Banjo and of other elements of these games and how like some of these things kind of came about as a result of either moments of spontaneity or discussions or like not by accident necessarily, but you know, a number of stars aligning in a way that ultimately worked out nicely. And so then you move on to something like Yooka-Laylee, which is meant to kind of knowingly reference these games. And I would imagine you had to design that with a lot more intentionality, a lot more of an eye toward things that had, since you made them originally, become very nostalgic for people. And so, like, how different was making Yooka-Laylee from making games like banjo, even though it was obviously, you know, in a lot of ways an homage to banjo.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that what we were creating made sense. Again, it goes back to the why doesn't a character just double jump for the sake of it? And so we wanted to make sure that the moves we had, the moveset we had, was things that would work well together with these characters. So, I mean, we started banding about different ideas. There was like a tiger at one point that was going to be the character. I don't know what the second character was going to be. And then we thought, you know, this idea of a bat and a chameleon, how could they interact? And with the thing, I know what the tongue on the chameleon, they could do things, and the chameleon could change colors, and then the bat could help out in ways that it can do things with sonar and so on, and it can be flying around behind. So that we're trying to think of the moveset. We're probably trying to think more of the movesets that we could use and potential moves, not that we necessarily locked them down, but just it kind of gave us a lot of a breadth of room to explore and try out all these different ideas of ways they could interact. And so that was more the thing that guided us along that way of the idea of, oh, let's try a lizard and a bat, put them together and see what happens. So there was definitely some more thought in terms of how we develop them. But there wasn't, even then, it was probably still a case of, let's try this. Steve Mails would have drawn some sketches and then modeled some things. And we said, yeah, that looks about right. Let's go with that. Because I think, particularly, you know, when we started with Playtonic, we were still quite small. We were very small to start with. And, you know, you don't have time to kind of spend months researching different ideas and possibilities that you might do, you know, later. When you're a bigger company, you might say, well, let's, you know, it's going to have a massive audience. Let's spend this month doing concepts for ideas, and then we'll whittle it down on the next month. But we were just wanting to get something going and something happening. So we kind of fly by the seat of our pants, really, and just try things out. So, and sometimes that helps because you're just creating things based on somebody else's idea, and you're kind of bouncing off and bounce it back to someone else. And sometimes that almost ends up with something that is more interesting than something that's just been methodically gone through by time and time again to kind of each reach some kind of conclusion of this is the most general best thing that we can create, because that you could end up with the, you know, the baseball cap and the training shoes if you go the wrong way in that kind of more formal process. Okay. So sometimes just a kind of bit of randomness thrown in there with people saying, oh, why don't we try this, why don't we try that, that can help.
Why don't we put a snake in a pair of pants and call him Trouser?
That's right. And then that idea itself was one which was Gavin, our managing director, he drew a post on a post-it note. He drew a snake, and he put this pair of trousers around it. And so we said, "Oh well, let's go with that idea." And so that was the beginning of that. And that was on his desk for ages. Oh, and we still got the post-it note somewhere. And then we needed this character, and he said, "Oh, use this one."
Yeah, my child fell in love my child is turning 10 tomorrow. Oh my goodness. One of my two twins was playing a lot of the banjo games on the Rare Replay on the Xbox, and then Ukulele came out and he fell in love with it, and then I had to explain to him the pun with the name Trouser Snake. So thanks. Thanks a lot.
I just got that like just now.
But it's amazing. He doesn't play video games as often as say I do. He's got the internet and YouTube, but when he does, those are the type of games he gravitates towards. And he's a big fan of Ukulele. He is a ridiculous fan of Ukulele. He even likes because Ukulele was kickstarted, he even likes turning on the credits and going through the really, really long list of names of the backers.
Aww.
He will turn that on. In fact, I'm afraid if I keep saying the name of the game, he'll come out here and try to do it. So let's not do that.
Do you think he's slowly memorizing really all those names over time? And
I would not be surprised. My children are very special. They learn different languages and remember ridiculous things. And he does point out names to me while he's doing it. He's like, here comes blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what are you doing? Well, it's like it's
when, bless his little heart.
Yeah, it's lovely when your love for a game is so all encompassing that you're even like, let's watch the credits.
That's really cool.
I mean, an hour.
That is really interesting though, to hear somebody like that young interact with that game. And I think a way that, I mean, I remember interacting with games from, you know, the N64 era in kind of like similar ways when I was a kid, like making, you know, tons and tons of like fan art of them, like making, I made like little animated flip books of GoldenEye actually, which was a funny thing. And when I say little, I mean that they were like hundreds of pages long.
Wow.
But yeah. So, I mean, I'm interested to know, like, what do you think of the idea of younger people like that interacting with a game like Yooka-Laylee in this era when, like, mascot platformers outside of, you know, some mainstays, your Marios, your Sonics, Ratchet and Clank, and so on, have not died out, but they're not such a mainstay anymore. It's kind of a novelty again. Like,
yeah.
Do you think that there's still something there that they can kind of bring to modern video games and to people who don't have that nostalgic connection to the older ones?
Yeah, I think it is. It is good because I think maybe otherwise we end up with too many games that have just appealed to an older audience. So we kind of need these games to stay around and exist. It's interesting, isn't it, how these games actually just seem to disappear after the 90s. I mean, my theory, I guess, one theory is that maybe it's because as each, you know, if you go back to the PS1, PS2, PS3 and so on, as each console generation came out, the push was seemed to be more, from what I remember at the time, was you'd go to the conferences and they'd be showing you demos of, yes, there was rubber ducks, but there was often more focus on some realistic face or part of someone's face. And oh, it was like, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. Look how amazing the detail are. And it was all about realism because you're going from a machines, which initially when we started with the N64, that, you know, GoldenEye obviously tried to do realism, but, you know, there's only so much you can do with the limited number of polygons. So it's easier to do stylized content, which is more cartoony things. But then as you get more and more power, then these games mm-hmm. become more capable. It's more capable, these machines, of doing things that are more realistic. And so the kind of things that are being teased to players is, oh, these consoles are new and look, they can do all these realistic stuff. So game makers are then thinking, well, that's what excites people. So that's what the games are going to make. So they start to skew their games a bit older. And so you have things which are probably still have some elements of things like collecting and, you know, all the kind of interacting and adventuring, you know, things like the things Naughty Dog do with Nathan Drake. So, and all those games, so the kind of still gameplay is still in there, but it's dressed up differently. So it's dressed up for a slightly older audience. And particularly as, I suppose, people have grown older, then they want something maybe that is a bit older. So I think maybe that might be one of the reasons why there's been a drift away from those mascot-type games. That's one theory, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say the mascot games have changed. I mean, as I was looking at mascot characters for this podcast, they're saying, you know, an Xbox mascot is Marcus Fenix. I'm like, what? Not what you traditionally think of as a mascot character, but Nathan Drake Martin, they've kind of come in and taken the place of some of these mascot characters. I mean, good for the video game industry for getting advanced enough where you can have a character that resonates with people that looks like a real guy. But still, I'm always a child of the 80s and the 90s, and I love my cartoon characters more than anything. So
yeah, I mean, right. I think if you have a mascot character that appeals to everyone, you've got, it feels from a, I guess from the platform holder's point of view, you've got more flexibility, I would assume, if you can have a Mario-style character, because, you know, you can show it to anybody of any age, whereas if you've only got Master Chief or Marcus Fenix, then you're kind of limited to the people you can... Well, I suppose you can always do a Lego version, or you can always you can kind of move it down, which is, I guess, what they've done to have versions that appeal.
Gears of War Tennis.
Yes.
That'd be amazing, man. I want Gears of War Tennis now with Waluigi too. Still, no one knows why he's there, but he's there.
Take cover behind the net.
Yes.
Yeah.
The roadie cam as you move around. Yeah.
But I think another thing that maybe, like, you know, whether fair or not, it seems kind of like at this point the mascot games that do come out are pretty laden in nostalgia, again, kind of knowingly. I mean, I think especially in y'all's case, because you were hearkening back to a game like Banjo-Kazooie. But do you think that modern mascot games can still break new ground, or are they kind of intrinsically nostalgia trips at this point? Are they kind of, is that just sort of what they've been relegated to?
I think they have to break new ground, really. And I think you see some of these things in the way that Nintendo's doing that with things like Odyssey. There's obviously the way they've progressed that. If you look back to the original, for the previous titles in that series, they've progressed that each time. And even with Bowser's Fury, they've progressed that a bit further still. So they're kind of generally pushing that, but that's Nintendo for you. So everybody else, I hope that there is a way to move things forward, and that we can see new things in this genre rather than it just being, you know, for the same. Otherwise, you're just going to have the same people who are going to look at it from a nostalgia point. And I think in terms of an audience, that's not a great audience to have, because they're going to dwindle in size. You kind of need new things and exciting things to keep people interested.
Right. So is that your way? Okay, so first of all, the most important question I have for you, are you going to call the sequel to Yooka-Laylee Tooka-Laylee? Because I just feel like, in keeping with the tradition of Banjo-Tooie, that's very important.
That's an interesting idea.
But I mean, also, when you're talking about these things and about companies like Nintendo innovating and pushing mascots in new directions, what does that mean for yourself as somebody who works on these kinds of games? Like, how do you, when you look at something like Mario Odyssey, what do you personally take from that? What do you say, like, oh, I can, what do you think you can take back to your own games?
Yeah, I mean, we do look at a lot of the new games that Nintendo come out with, mainly because they are the pinnacle of, you know, what is out there. And we take inspiration from the kind of things they do. So the kind of things that, for example, in Odyssey, that you can see from the, if you go back to the Mario on N64, I mean, obviously that's a big leap, but they've done things where you go into worlds and you're not having to, I mean, this was something that was in Banjo as well, where you kind of go in and you stay in the world rather than having to come back out each time, be knocked back out. And it's like, oh, I've got to go back in again and get through all the same, repeat through all the same areas again. Before I can get to this next star or this next, in this case, it's moons. But by having the moons in the game, in the world, so that they're there, you collect one moon and then you continue on your journey to the next one. Again, that's a nod, I think, towards the fact that, particularly in something like Switch, where you're handheld, you pick it up and you put it down, you want it to be something you got a snack-sized challenge, so you can go, oh, I'm going to try and get this far now, I'm trying to get that far, and there's enough content in that game where they don't have to throw you back to kind of make you go through everything again, or they don't really want you to go through everything again. There's enough, you can basically always see new content, unless you're obviously going to play for many, many hours. So that kind of idea is quite interesting, the idea that you're not having to backtrack so much, except until, you know, the very later stages of something like Odyssey. Again, a great idea where they have things that you'd seen throughout the whole of it, where you thought, oh, what's that strange cube? What's that strange cube? It seems to be on every level. And then at the end, you kind of reveal, oh, I thought I'd completed the game, but now there's more. And now there's these cubes, and now it opens up again. And it's for somebody, again, that's a great example where somebody can play through and feel they've finished the game and they can put it away. But for somebody else who really wants more, they can get more out of it. It's like a sponge. They can just keep squeezing it and there's more that comes out. And so the range of people that appeals to is great, because it's not like an insurmountable challenge for everyone, because they can just get to this point where they go, oh, I've beaten the enemy, I've rescued who I need to rescue, and I've completed the game. There's the credits. So yeah, that kind of thing is, again, is something where just appealing to different people, because we see that now, I think, where there's people who are really focused and interested on one particular game and they'll play it to death. And you kind of want to give something to those people as well as to the people who are just going to play it once. So you want everybody to get something out of it. So it's trying to work out the best way to do that and how that balances with your development time.
Hmm. I have one final question. So given that Kazooie can walk with a bear on her back, how much can she leg press?
Oh, that's a good question.
I've never been asked that question.
At least the weight of a bear, I guess.
Well, I guess it's at least the weight of one bear and a backpack, I guess. So she's quite strong there. But she also is able to, certainly in Bobbergaloop Swamp, she was able to, with the Wellington boots, she was able to extend her legs, wasn't she? So she could have very long legs and still carry the bear. So that was probably even more of a feat of strength. Exactly what weight Banjo is, I don't know if that's ever been documented, and I don't know if I know the answer to that, but if you can find the weight of a bear, that's a good starting point.
She might be the strongest character. Yeah.
Alexa, what's the weight of a bear?
A bear typically weighs between 59 pounds, 8 ounces, and 990 pounds when fully grown.
Holy crap, bears are heavy.
I didn't fully hear that. What did Alexa say?
999 pounds when fully grown.
Damn.
999 is a good number for a video game character.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. That'll be my next bear character.
So everyone, you heard it here first. Banjo weighs exactly 999 pounds. That's canon.
If he weighed any more, he would just wrap round and it would go to zero.
Underflow weight error.
No. There's a kill screen, actually. It doesn't reset. Just kidding, it glitched. Aww. We have fun here at Kotaku Split Screen. I've had a lot of fun talking to you, Chris Sutherland. I believe Nathan and Ashley have as well. Have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Thank you. I've had a lot of fun being here.
Is there anything you'd like to plug before we go? Any projects you're working on that you can tell us about? Secrets. Tell us secrets.
Well, I don't have any secrets, but I can tell you that obviously the original ukulele game's out, still out there for people to take a look at. And then obviously in 2019, we released Ukulele and Impossible Lair, which seems to have had a great reception. And then more recently, we started publishing games. So we've got a number of games that have been announced. So we've got Demon Turf, which is a 3D platformer again, so with a different mascot character, actually. This is from Fabraz. And then we've got BPM, which is coming out from All Interactive, and then A Little Golf Journey from Okidoki Go. So those three games will be publishing. I don't know if we actually announced when they're going to be released, but they'll be coming out.
I was going to ask if it was the bullets per minute. That's awesome.
BPM
I love
is that beats. It's the shooter with the beats. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you again so much for being here, Chris. This has been Kotaku Split Screen. You are listening to Kotaku Split Screen Podcast. You can reach us via email at splitscreen@kotaku.com and on Twitter at Uncle Fahey, that's me, at Vahn16, V-A-H-N-16, that's Animated Squirrel Nathan Grayson, cartoon character Ashley Parrish is at Ad Astra, A-D-A-S-H-T-R-A. Our producer is Michaela Heck, and our sound engineer is Ryan Allen. And our goal is to take over the world. Oh my God, that's terrifying. We'll never doing that again. Thanks for watching, everybody, or listening.
So out of character for me.
Don't ever do that. Why?